Hello and welcome to the Azure Active Directory and Identity Show. My name is Simon May and I'm going to be using this show to take you through some of the new features that are coming out inside of Azure Active Directory and our identity services and just help you to get a bit of an understanding around what we're doing in that space. It's very fast moving and every one of these episodes is going to be coming out very, very quickly. Joining me today is Stuart Kwan from the Identity team. Welcome to the Channel 9 studio.
Thank you very much.
What are we talking about?
Oh, we're going to talk about some of the difficulties people have building applications that face consumers today and face customers. What I'd like you to do, just for a moment, trust me here on this one, I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to think about all the different places that you sign in on the web, on your mobile app, on your phone, and on your PC and stuff like that, that are that are personal things that you're doing, so they're not work-related.
Okay.
You sign in to get your email, you sign into various social networks, you sign into your bank. If you're a parent, maybe you sign into the PTA or school, travel sites, blogs that you might visit, games that you use, lots of different places, right? So you can have lots of different places that you sign in.
Yeah.
Now, do you know what the real underlying significance of that is?
Well, I guess there's, from my point of view, there's something that I'm going to do with my own behavior, which probably is not a best practice thing to do, which is to sign into all of those with, I'm probably going to use the same password, which is probably not the best thing to do, but it's the only way when I've got so many accounts to remember that I can actually deal with that. I guess there's something from the point of view of people that are building the applications. That's going to be kind of a lot of work, I guess.
Yeah, there's this tremendous problem that all kinds of developers face when they're building these applications, and more people are coming online. Businesses are offering some kind of application that faces their customers or their alumni or or students or parents or what have you. And all of them have to code sign-in because almost always if you're building one of these applications and there's something that you want to do in the application that's valuable, you've got to sign in before you can do that.
Yeah.
So it's an integral part of the application. And it's not often top of mind when you're building the app.
Yeah, I guess you just kind of think, I'm just going to grab some kind of authentication mechanism afterwards. And that leads to some strangeness. I've seen people build kind of their own authentication database and that kind of thing. It's kind of a bit hooky over time.
It used to be that you could just tack on a database with names and passwords and that was good enough.
Yeah.
But as it turns out, it's getting more and more challenging over time just to handle the sign-in part of your application. In fact, if you do have one of these things today where you've got a database of names and passwords and that's how people are signing in, you've become a target for attack on the web precisely for one of the things that you mentioned earlier. A lot of people, for good or for bad, they use the same password and the same username and the same password in a lot of different places that they go to. And attackers know this, and they're starting to breach these sites, not so that they can get at the information of your app necessarily. Maybe they aren't interested in getting into your app. All they want is your list of names and passwords, because that lets them take that stuff and attack other places where they really wanted to go, potentially. So anybody who has one of these lists of names and passwords is a target. And that's a problem. A lot of people are recognizing this is a problem for an application that I'm building, but I have to have this online presence. I have to have my customers or my alumni or those people all being able to sign into my app. And the attacks are getting more and more sophisticated. This is a terrible thing. Now, that's just one problem. There's a couple of other things that people who are building and maintaining these applications have to deal with. One is they might think at the beginning, and often people do, they think, oh, well, how hard could this be? But as it turns out, there's quite a bit of code that you end up needing to write, because you're not just signing people in, you're also signing them up, and probably you'd want to validate their email address, so you have this mail you have to send, and they get the secret link in the mail, and they come back to your app. You have to code all that. You have to code it when they forget their username. You have to code it when they forget their password. And then because sign up and sign in is something that is integral to getting to doing that valuable thing in the application, it's a really important critical path thing. And people are constantly trying to tune it so that it's more less and less friction, right? You want people to be able to sign up really quickly. You want them to be able to sign in really quickly. So there's new techniques that are showing up. On mobile devices, people sign in with their phone number for some apps. Yeah. Or there are places you go now on the web where they'll say you're going to use your email as the sign-in, and they mean it. You won't ever have a password there. You'll just enter your email, and they'll send you an email, and that's how you're going to get signed in. So they can try to avoid storing passwords and stuff like that. So there's all these, it's a moving target. There's all these innovations going on. Mm-hmm. And you end up spending a good portion of your resources just to write that code. And it's not time spent on your app. That's just one problem. A lot of people will then go buy something off the shelf Which is probably a good idea because off-the-shelf software has probably been built by experts. They have looked for various security problems that might come up as a part of this because identity is integral with security. But as it turns out, a lot of the people we talk to, this off-the-shelf stuff they buy is very expensive. And they pay a lot in licensing fees, they pay a lot in professional services, and then they still have to apply development resources to do the integration. And then finally, there's this other one very interesting problem that many people have. You might have millions and millions of users, and the traffic might be very, very seasonal. So maybe a lot during the year, there's a very low average of a traffic of users coming and signing into your site, but then you might have some sort of event, a promotion, or you know, your Super Bowl commercial, or when your people are submitting their tax, their tax returns, or they're going back to school, and there are these big peaks all
big
of a sudden
troughs,
that you have to handle, and that means you have to provision for the peak, especially if it's an on-premises system and you've got a lot of this idle hardware during other parts of the year. But you have to have it for managing that peak. That's the most important time for you to service your customers. So it can be really tricky, as it turns out, to build and run one of these systems. So as it turns out, Microsoft is in a very unique position to help people with this.
Well, we've kind of got some of those systems that have done those peaks and troughs for quite some time. I'm guessing things like Xbox is going to actually have some pretty significant peaks around the holiday season as people get new Xboxes and start signing in with new accounts and that kind of thing. And we must be seeing, I mean, we see literally billions of authentications for Azure Active Directory for Office 365. So that we must have solved a lot of this already.
As it turns out, yeah, we have some of the biggest applications on the web. You've mentioned some of them, Office 365, Xbox Live, Outlook.com. And we have to sign users in, we have to sign users up for those applications, and we have to protect them. Mm-hmm. You can imagine there's a lot of people who would like to break in and get at our identity system. So we've spent a great deal of resources, a great deal of time, a great deal of energy to build these sign-in systems and to make them safe for our users to use. And what if we could take all of that capability that we've built and we could make it available for other people to use as well in their applications? And that's essentially what I'm here to talk about today. We're launching this preview of a capability that we call Azure Active Directory B2C. Mm-hmm. And it takes Azure Active Directory that we've already built as this global service for Office 365 that has hundreds of millions of users in it and does billions of authentications per day. And we've added the features that you would need to make it a consumer-facing system that any developer could use to sign users into their application. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of interesting benefits to this. So we've added features like you can sign users in with Facebook and Google and stuff like that. And you can actually sign users in to accounts that just belong to your application. We've built this capability. And because of the global scale of what we've done, because we've already built the system out, we're able to drive costs down in ways that other people can't, right? Just because we're in 17 regions and more than 2 dozen data centers, and we have all the hardware and software we can amortize out over this enormous system that we've built, we're able to drive costs down in the building and running of the system. We're able to pass those savings along to people who might want to use this capability. And we're going to also charge for it on a consumption basis so that you only pay for as much as you use. If during most of the year you have very low traffic, you'll pay us a very low fee. And then during those peaks, you'll pay for commensurately for the amount of resources you're using during those big bubbles. But we're able to handle all of that traffic because we've got this great big elastic cloud system, and we're able to take everyone's traffic and sort of smooth it out across the big system that we built. But probably most importantly, because we're protecting our users, because we're protecting Xbox users and Office 365 users, we have hired whole teams of domain experts who do nothing but watch the threat landscape, watch the incoming traffic to the system, look for patterns that indicate anomalies, look for patterns that indicate fraud, look for botnets and their ingress into the system and how they might be attacking the system. We do all of those things. We have dedicated teams that are constantly watching the system and constantly adapting it, because it's an arms race. The attackers are getting more sophisticated, and then we have to get more sophisticated. Yeah. But we can afford to invest the resources to stay on top of that. And people who then use Azure AB2C will get all of the benefit of that without having to do anything. They won't just basically keep using our system. You won't have to hire security experts to stay on top of it. And even if you tried to, you probably couldn't have enough people to do it to keep your level of sophistication higher than the attackers.
So we can basically take Azure Active Directory and extend it out to your consumers, your end users, your partners potentially as well. And because we're doing that on top of Microsoft's cloud, on top of Azure, you get all of the economy of scale benefits, the security benefits, all of our future investment benefit. Actually, you just get to leverage it very, very quickly.
Yeah, as it turns out, this is a very, it's a problem well suited to solving in the cloud.
Yeah.
We'll store your users' passwords for you. We'll make sure they're properly encrypted and hashed. We'll make sure that the bad guys can't come and get at them, and then you don't have to think about that. So it's pretty compelling. In fact, what I'd like to do is show you an example. So I have an application that I've built here, a fictional application, our heroes Prosware, and I've adapted it to use Azure AD for both sign in and sign up. So
okay.
let's go ahead and we'll sign a user up. So I click the sign up button. So Prosware is okay with people signing in with their social IDs, Google and Facebook or Microsoft, but they also want to have an option for users to get an account at the Prosware application. They call this a Prosware account. You probably think about this too when you go to sign up somewhere. It's like sometimes you're okay using your Google account to sign in somewhere, but other times you want to have an account directly in that application.
Yeah, virtually everything every application that's on the web that I go and use, I actually end up saying I want an account just for this, because if one of my other accounts has some kind of issue or I'm kind of locked out of it for some reason because I've forgotten my Facebook password or wherever, I actually still need to have access to that thing, which has now become a business critical application. So I kind of personally vary my approach. Sometimes I'm using social accounts, sometimes I'm using an account that's just local to that application.
I have this theory that everyone has their own little algorithm in their head about when they're going to pick to use their Facebook account, or when they're going to pick to use their Microsoft account, when they're going to pick to use their Google account, when they're going to create an account, and what of their set of passwords they use, they're going to use there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you'll have my bank is important, so it has a special password. But the blog and the PTA and the and that, although they share the same password, or maybe my you can get your medical records online and stuff like that now. Maybe that's yet a different case. But here we have the Azure AD B2C is giving the capability to use all those different options. In fact, let's go ahead and we'll sign up a user with a Prosware account. So that they have one of these accounts that's local to the Prosware application. We call these local accounts. So I've got some stuff I can do here to sign up. Let's say that I want to use my Microsoft email address as my sign-in name. They want me to verify that I actually have that email address, so I'm going to go ahead and it's going to send off a verification email. And now actually what we're going to need to do is I'm going to flip to my email. Okay, well, so here we go. I've got the code. The code came back. We can lift the screen back up now. All right, so I got this code in my email, and I click verify. And okay, so my email address is verified, and then I'm going to create a unique password for this site. And they want to know what name I want to be known as on this when I'm in the application, and if I have a membership number or what kind of offering I want to have at Prosware. Great. These are all things like membership number, offering.
These are all custom attributes that you're creating somewhere.
Exactly. And I'll show you how I did that in a minute. But yeah, that's not stuff that's in Active Directory, right?
Yeah.
You don't see that stuff. I go ahead and I click continue to get completely signed up. And I'm back in the application. I'm both signed up and signed in. Mm-hmm. So I did that all happened in one step. It knows that I'm Stuart. And actually, you know what? Oh, I forgot to ask you something. When we were looking at that screen just a moment ago, that sign-up screen, were you looking at the Prosware application?
I thought so.
No, you weren't looking at the Prosware application. You were actually looking at Azure AD B2C in that moment. That was all user interface that was customized by me when I built the application, but it's actually all being hosted at Azure AD. And there's an important reason for that. I entered my password on that screen.
And we want to make sure that password's entered into a site which is secure.
Yes, we don't want you, the application developer, ever to have to handle it or ever see it. It's not in your hands, so you don't have to worry about it. It's all being rendered by Azure AD. Now, if you rewind the tape, which some people may be tempted to do at the moment, you'll notice that the URL of the that on the screen when I was doing the sign-up was login.microsoftonline.com, and that's the URL of the endpoint of Azure Active Directory. In the future even, so we don't have this for the preview, but later we'll make it so that can be your URL as well. So you'll be able to give us an SSL certificate, and then it'll just say prosware.com, login.prosware.com. So for all intents and purposes, it will look like Prosware everywhere in the browser and everywhere in the URL, but it won't be Prosware rendering it. It'll be us rendering it. But there won't be any way for anyone to tell that Microsoft's part of the interaction. And that's important to us. This is really platform as a service for you to reuse, and we don't need to be anywhere in that interaction. You need to be able to control it all yourself. Okay. So I'm back at the application. Yeah. Let's see what it did actually send me, though. All my app does is dump out what's called the contents of a JSON web token.
Okay.
This is the information about the user that was sent back. And if you look here, you can see, oh, well, there's the email address that was verified. We can tell it was a local account and the display name Stuart. And oh, here's the membership number and the offering type that was gathered up. So even that information that was gathered up during sign-in mm-hmm. is sent in the token to the application, so the application can know this information and start doing things with me.
Cool. Okay. So it kind of feels like you've got an OpenID/OAuth2 workflow type of thing happening in the background there.
It's actually exactly OpenID Connect, which is a fantastic segue to come back into my presentation here. We have a principle that we follow in Azure AD, and that is that we want all interactions with the system to be based on open standards. Mm-hmm. So the way that you authenticate to B2C is either through OAuth2O or OpenID Connect. And I'll go OpenID Connect 1.0. I'll talk a little bit more specifically about how you fashion the request for that in a moment. But it's a standard request, and you can use standard libraries and stuff like that to interact with the system. And not only do we have the authentication endpoint, but you can also fully program the directory and create users and delete them, read them, and stuff like that through the Graph API. Mm-hmm. And the Graph API is just an OData REST API. So again, it's a standard. And it's really simple then to make these REST calls to create users, delete users. And in fact, the stuff I showed, that sign up screen and all that, you don't have to use that if you don't want to. If you have some other mechanism that you use to create accounts, some automated mechanism, or you want to have absolutely full control over that, then you can do that and you can just create the accounts in our system using the REST API. So you can take and use as much as you want of the system. But we do OAuth2O, OpenID Connect, and to help developers build applications, we also offer a full range of open source libraries. And all of our libraries are posted up on GitHub, and they're under an MIT license. We are happy to accept contributions back if people find problems or if they want to add features. We accept pull requests on these libraries. And we have them for .NET, of course, but also platforms like Node.js, iOS, and Android. The system works equally well for web apps and mobile apps and PC apps. Because, of course, Azure AD, for things like Office 365, supports web apps, mobile apps, PC apps. So we have that full range. In fact, that Prosware application, just for fun, when I built it, I actually built it using Node.js on a Linux Ubuntu server running in Microsoft Azure. So I could go as far away from what you would expect from us, but really what a lot of people do when they're building these applications.
Yeah. Very cool.
All right. So let's talk very briefly very about the request. Yeah. So this is a typical OpenID Connect request. Mm-hmm. We didn't invent anything new here. If you're familiar with OpenID Connect and you look at the request, you'll see stuff that's very familiar. The client ID represents the application. The redirect URI is where tokens are going to get sent back to. Scope and response type. These are all standard mechanisms. But the special secret sauce, if you will, of this is this thing we call policies. So there's an extra parameter that I've attached to the call, the P parameter, and it's indicating that a particular policy should be applied when this request goes through. So actually, let me show you how I set all of this up in B2C.
Let's take a look.
So we'll go back to...
So the first thing I noticed immediately, actually, I'm used to seeing everything inside of Azure Active Directory inside of the old portal. This is in the new portal.
This is in the new portal. Yeah. It's the first Azure AD components that are going to be in the new portal. Mm-hmm. What we're looking at right here is the control panel, if you will, the blade, that represents how I manage my Azure Active Directory B2C tenant. So to build all of this, the very first thing I did was I went and I got a B2C tenant as opposed to a regular Azure AD tenant.
Right.
The assumptions are different in a B2C tenant. For example, in a regular Azure AD tenant, it's assumed that users can see each other, right? Because I want to find people in the address book, and they're my colleagues in an organization. In a B2C tenant, we don't want people to see each other. We don't want individual people to be able to browse and find out who else is a customer here or such. So we have a special or different tenants, Azure AD B2C tenant, and here's where I would register my application in the tenant, where I would configure that I accept Facebook and Google. I have to set that up because I need to make registrations at Facebook and Google to get that working. Here I extend the schema or manage the schema of the directory, and you can see the membership number and the offering type attributes of the user, I added them here. And I could add as many other ones as I want so that I can put the things into the directory that are important to my application. And then there's these policies that then drive the behavior of the system. As you can see, we have a different kinds of policies, sign up, sign in, profile editing or password reset. When someone needs to self-service password reset, the system handles that for you. You don't have to write code for it. But let's take a look at a policy so you can understand how this works. Let's look at the sign up policies. And in fact, in the previous example, I said there was the standard sign up policy, which was part of that request when we did the demo. When I went into the ProZware app and I clicked the sign up button, it sent an OpenID Connect request mm-hmm. with that sign up parameter on it, which activated this policy that I've created. And I can have as many of these policies as I want, and I'll tell you in a moment why that's important. So I created this policy. Let's take a look at what's inside it. So here we can see if someone comes through this policy, then they're signing up and they can pick from one of these identity providers. And if I wanted, I could uncheck these. Maybe I don't want to support Google and Facebook. Maybe just for this particular application or for this particular route through a particular through an application, I only want to support, say, a local account sign up, or I only want to support a Facebook sign up. Then I could set that here in this policy. And then also, here's where I configured the fact that I asked the user for their display name, their email, their membership number, and their offering type on that sign up screen. So I configured that here. And then also, I configured the list of information that gets sent back to the application. So those claims that we saw on the app when I was done, the display name, email address, membership number, offering type, identity provider, so I can tell was this a Facebook user, a Google user, or a local user. And then finally, there's one other attribute that I'm sending here, which is important for this application. It's the object ID. That's the unique identifier for the app, because someone can change their email address. Mm-hmm. They can change their name. But I don't want that to mean that they suddenly have a different identity in my app. So this is the rename safe information about the user. So I've picked all of those things. And finally, if I wanted to, I could also configure multi-factor authentication here. So maybe when the user signs up, I want them to prove that they have a particular phone number. So they'll enter their phone number, they'll get a phone call, and we'll verify it. And then we can use that later if we need them to do a multi-factor sign-in.
Which is obviously going to help if they are reusing the same password in multiple places. It's going to actually put an extra layer of security around that.
An extra layer of security that you as the developer didn't need to write any code for, right? Yeah. It's just we took care of that for you. And if other new mechanisms show up, we'll add those mechanisms here, and you won't have to write any code to take care of it. You just send us the OpenID Connect request. We apply the policy. We make sure the right things happen. We send the information back to you.
Cool.
And then finally, the last thing I did was I customized that sign up page. So here, how did I do that customization? Well, the policy allows me to set what the labels are going to be on the various fields, input fields that have been set up, what kind of input fields. That offering type was a drop-down selection field, so I picked that here. And then finally, I supplied the HTML and the CSS that was used to render that page. Mm-hmm. And that's why it looked like ProZware instead of looking like Azure AD. So I could do all that customization and make it look like my own site.
Very cool. So it seems like we've got a vast amount of flexibility in there, all the kind of things that you actually need to be able to use in order to get up and running. How do folks get hold of Azure B2C?
Well, we're in preview. In fact, we've been in private preview for a little bit, and we actually have some people who are using the private preview already. Let me just talk really briefly about Real Madrid. So back in May at our Ignite conference, we announced that we had a big partnership with Real Madrid. We helped them build some new fan applications, mobile fan applications. And Real Madrid's one of the most popular sports clubs in the world, really. Yeah. And they have 450 million fans. And they were worried about, okay, well, when we have this new fan app, we need people to sign in so we can have a personalized presentation for them of the application. how are we going to have a sign-in that could possibly handle hundreds of millions of users? And they partnered with us, and we actually built their application on Azure AB2C while it was in private preview.
Wow.
There was actually a very brief moment where it was the number one application in the iTunes store. It was like ahead of Facebook and Instagram. It was the Real Madrid app, and we handled lots of people signing in on those first few days when the application came out. And we have a great partnership with them. We're very happy with how that worked out. Now, today, we are in public preview. And if you go to the old Azure portal, you can create a B2C tenant. That's where you'll start, in the old Azure portal. So you'll in the Azure Active Directory section, create a new tenant. And there's a tick box that sort of says, this is a B2C tenant. You say yes. Mm-hmm. And then you'll be taken into the new portal, and you'll be able to do that configuration that I just described. Once you've done that configuration, you can write your app, use our libraries, send those requests, requesting a policy. That's all it takes, really. It's very straightforward.
Very cool. So you've instantly proved that we can handle the scale, which was the first thing that we were talking about there. You can get hold of the feature directly through the portals. Nice and easy to get access to them. If you've got an MSDN subscription, easy way of trying it. If not, you can get a free Azure trial in order to try everything out.
And then, in fact, so I have a list of features here just in summary, but there's one thing people are probably wondering is, okay, well, it sounds really good, but how much is this going to cost?
Yeah,
me?
That's a great point.
And we think people are going to find this surprisingly affordable. The reason why we're able to make it so affordable, of course, is because Azure AD is, we have an economy of scale that we can use to drive down costs as we run the system.
Yeah.
And then that lets us, again, pass that saving along to people who are using it. And since we're going to do it in a consumption basis, and you're only going to pay for what you use, we think that's like the optimal model for folks. There will be three meters on the consumption, one, and they're all per month. So the number of users that you have in your tenant, the number of regular authentications you do per month, and the number of multi-factor authentications you do per month. Each of those will have a different cost. If you want to find out exactly what the graduated scale looks like, that. So if you only, you know, if you do between this many and a million, between a million and 10 million, 10 million and higher, we have different charges, and they go down as you go higher. If you want to find out exactly what those charges are, it's available on the Azure pricing page today with the announcement of the preview. And one last thing, there's also a free tier. So mm-hmm. at the first 50,000 users, the first 50,000 regular authentications are free. So if you have a small site, you might be free forever. Or if you're just doing development and kicking the tires, it won't cost you anything to try this out.
Cool. Awesome. Stuart, thank you very much for joining me in the studio. We'll see you next time on the Azure AD and Identity Show.